Hey everybody, it's The Trout, and welcome to another episode of The Trout Show Podcast. Thank you so much for stopping by. This is a special podcast-only episode, because there is no video on this, because my guest today did a phone interview with me recently and didn't have an opportunity to sit in front of the camera for me. But that's okay, because you're going to learn about one of the great guitarists that's out there right now in the world. His name is Fred Tackett. Now, you're probably saying to yourself, who's Fred Tackett? Well, he's been playing with a band called Little Feat for years. Now, if you're not familiar with Little Feat, they became very famous in the 70s and 80s, have sold millions of records and sold out tours everywhere. But more importantly, Fred has been involved in the music industry and has collaborated or performed with on records or in person with some of the greats in the industry. Some of the people you might recognize as Cher, Greg Allman, Neil Diamond, Joan Baez, Paul Anka, Clint Black, Debbie Boone, Jackson Browne, Glenn Campbell, Kenny Loggins, Barry Manilow, well, and this guy named Willie Nelson. Just a few people you might recognize. So Fred talks to me about his career and what it's like. He just keeps going. He's 78 years old and he doesn't ever want to stop because he's got a lot on his plate. And I'm glad he talked to me. So sit back, get yourself an Anno beverage, and relax and hear the story about Fred Tackett and his life in the music industry. That's next, right after this message from David Smith of Edward Jones.
Hey, it's The Trout. Quick question for you. When's the last time you heard from your financial advisor? Well, if you're still thinking about it, apparently it's been a long time. And when you do hear from this individual, do you get a feeling that they're more concerned about their financial wealth than yours? Maybe it's time to talk to an expert that's concerned about your financial possibilities. That's David Smith with Edward Jones. David has years of experience of helping people just like you. So why not give him a quick call at 469-372-1587. David's ready to sit down and talk to you about reaching your goals and your financial possibilities. That's David Smith with Edward Jones. 469-372-1587. Get a financial health checkup now with David Smith of Edward Jones. 469-372-1587.
So what drives you, though, my friend, to be able to continue to tour and do what you do?
Well, it's the, the idea that I've, known Billy Payne and Kenny Gradney and Sam, and of course, Lowell and Paul, that are not with us anymore. But, those guys were friends of mine when I was like 22, 23 years old, yeah. It's basically a family thing. Which the band Little Feat was all put together as a neighborhood band, really. I mean, Hollywood was like a small neighborhood in the music scene when it was going on there. I mean, you just knew everybody that was working a lot. It's a small kind of group of people, kind of cliquish, actually.
Yeah.
But I was lucky to be involved in the middle of it through Jimmy Webb and Lowell George. Jimmy would hook me up with Glenn Campbell and all the country people in the world, and then Lowell hit me up with all the rock guys. And so I was just a blessed, lucky guy to be in the right place at the right time. And those guys are like a family now, and so we've been together. So it's been 53 years or something ridiculous now, and you know, it's just Paul and I wrote a song called "I Do What the Telephone Tells Me to Do," and the phone rings, and somebody says, you know, you got to be at the airport on a certain day at a certain time, and I go, okay, and then they, you know.
Well, that's your life.
We go play music.
And I guess the blessing is that you get to play with such great musicians. You've been able to play with such great performers.
I was thinking about it last night, man. It's just while we were in the middle of one of Billy's piano solos on Dixie Chicken, I'm just standing there going, man, it's amazing to be here every night. You know, this is why we ride the bus all day. Like, we had a, like, you know, 8.5 hour bus ride from New Orleans to Austin.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
and we're playing, you know, last night, and I thought, well, you know, it's all worth it just to do this. This is, you know, to be on the stage and playing with these guys, man. And now, you know, with Scott Sherrard and Tony Leone in the band, it's like amazing. You know, those two guys are just amazing musicians.
So let's go back to the very beginning. Was guitar your first instrument you started playing when you were a kid, and when did you pick one up?
No, my first instrument was a trumpet. My father played trumpet. My older brother played trumpet. So I learned, started playing trumpet when I was 5 years old. And then I was, you know, I got and fell in love with being a drummer. And so I was a drummer for, you know, started doing that. And then when I was 12 years old and Elvis Presley came along, I said, I got to have a guitar. Mm. And got a little Stella guitar from my parents and started learning, you know, the first basic chords. And it was very strange because I had like all of these musical genres, like classical music and band, you know, the concert band, the marching band, and classical music. I played trumpet, you know, and I trumpet in church and all this stuff like that. And rock and roll, I played guitar in a rock and roll band, and then I played jazz drums, and like my jazz bow friends didn't know that I played guitar, you know. My rock and roll guys didn't know I played in a played drums in a jazz band, and the same thing with the classical guys. So it wasn't until I was in college and I moved up to Oklahoma City and was playing a 6-night-a-week gig at the supper club, you know, and the leader of the band came over to my apartment one day and saw the guitar. I was playing drums in this band, and a guy saw the guitar and says, "What's up with the guitar?" And I told him, and he went, whoa, wait a minute, man. You know, you're going to come out and you're going to play the guitar on this stuff, and then you're going to play the Shadow of Your Smile on the trumpet. And he hooked it all up together like, hey, what are you doing separating all these things? You're going to do them all on the show tonight, you know.
Yeah.
It's that show band kind of stuff, you know. And, you know, that's the guy that got Joe Davis, some wonderful Texas tenor player, man, from North Texas guy. Same era as Lou Marini and Saturday Night Live and Billy Harper. Those three guys were just amazing tenor players and alto players, saxophone players in general. But, you know, I had this gig, and that was my kind of – I was going to college so that I, you know, didn't get drafted. And my gig was my college education was this 6-night-a-week gig, which unfortunately don't exist anymore. I mean, you know, used to be every Holiday Inn in the country had a band.
Oh, yeah, that's right. They did, didn't they? Yeah. That's not
like a joke. Oh, it's a Holiday Inn band, you know?
Yep.
And you could go anywhere. Even up to 1979, when I started playing with Bob Dylan, I remember Al Kooper and I sat in with a band and destroyed, and Jim Keltner somehow managed to destroy all their instruments in one go sitting in. I think I knocked the guy's guitar amp off. Jim Keltner broke a bass drum head, and somehow Al Kooper messed up the piano. And we said, thank you, good night. At that point, there were still, you know, in 1979, there was still Holiday Inn bands. But now all that, there are no 6-night-a-week gigs anymore for anybody. And that was a real education. And I was back enough shows. We had like floor shows, these kind of great C acts that had been on the Johnny Carson show one time, you know, would play in Oklahoma City every 2 weeks. There'd be a different act. And it was a real experience because I'd be playing behind comedians, belly dancers, and then all these like...
Kind of like the Ed Sullivan show. Kind of like that, isn't it?
Yeah, it was just an amazing experience because they would come in with these Judy Garland medleys. It would, you know, and just, you know, sight reading. So it was very, it was just a great educational experience to set me up for doing anything, you know.
Well, you know, the funny thing, you mentioned somebody there that I was a big fan of was Al Cooper.
Yeah, man, good friend.
And is he still with us?
Yeah.
Because I was a huge fan of his. I loved his stuff. His early stuff. I mean, after he, you know, after Blood, Sweat, and Tears thing, I got into listening to him. And I always thought he's one of those people that never made it as big as he should have been, I think. But what a great player. And wrote some great tunes. And, you know, of course, people don't even know who the Blood, Sweat, and Tears are anymore. But, you know, I know all about the start. And then I started following him. And I always wondered, I don't know when it was. It was quite back sometime. I was looking to see if he was still with us and still doing anything. I think the last album I got from him was, oh my goodness, back in the 90s, I think, or something like that.
Yeah, I was talking to Jimmy Vivino, you know, and he's a guitar player, played on the Conan O'Brien show, and he's a New York guy, and I think he lives in L.A., but he's a good friend of Al's. And I asked him the last time I saw him, and he said he was still hanging in. I think he's living in Boston. That was the last time I saw him. I went to his apartment in Boston, but I'm not exactly sure what he's doing. I think he's online. It's Alphonse.
Well, you know, that just goes back to what I said at the very beginning. You've been exposed to and you got an opportunity and still do play with some great players. But the historical part for me is, and see, when I didn't realize you'd done so many sessions. And the question I ask a lot of people of your caliber is, and you may not know because it's been a while back, but when was the moment you said you were on stage and thought, I can't believe I need to pinch myself? You know, I was talking to somebody who played with Joe Bonamassa, and they go, oh, yeah, when they were playing this song or whatever. Do you remember that moment when you thought, I've made it now?
I think, yeah, you know, when I got to, because I came to L.A. working with Jimmy Webb, the songwriter, and I was sort of his private guitar player. He, you know, introduced me to Glenn Campbell, and through him I started doing session work. And Lowell, we met at Jimmy's house and stuff, and we knew him way before he started Little Feet. And then I got started, and I got involved with Bob Skaggs on the Silk Degrees album.
Oh, great album.
That album. And I hadn't been playing live with anybody, really. You know, it was all session work. And I went out and did 3 weeks touring behind the Silk Degrees record. And that was the first, you know, kind of rock and roll moment when we were on stage doing, you know, the Lowdown and all that stuff. Yeah. And people going, okay, this is happening. And all the rest of the band was like the future Toto, except for Steve Lukather, who was still in high school at the moment, you know. But and as soon as he got out of high school, they started Toto. But yeah, I think that was the first moment. But the real moment for me was when I played with Bob Dylan. We started out playing the first year nothing but his Christian songs, from Slow Train Coming, and then we did his album Saved. And then at one point, he decided to go back and start playing his old songs. And we were playing Like a Rolling Stone, and it's the very first song. And everybody was expecting him to, you know, just to do the Christian material. And we started playing Like a Rolling Stone as the opening song of the set. And the people went crazy. And I got this chill up my spine.
Oh, wow.
It was like, I can't believe that we're up here playing Like a Rolling Stone with Bob Dylan standing like 5 feet away from me. You know, I thought, this is something else. You know, Bob Skaggs was like, you know, probably my favorite band leader of all time. And that was just exciting because it was like, you know, the album was so popular and people were loving it so much. But, you know, playing that song with Dylan a few years later was just like, wow. You know, that was a real wow moment for me, a highlight of the playing live career.
You know, it's interesting. I think everybody has those moments. People, you know, that I've interviewed that are famous or well-known, I typically always ask him that because we all, you know, the one thing I always say to people is the unfortunate part about being a performer is people that aren't performers don't get to enjoy the moments that you do on stage.
Yeah.
And that's one thing you can't bottle up and show people or tell everybody. And you know, it just, there's something about it. And then there's that moment when, you know, you guys are a touring band and you're all great musicians, but then there's those moments that the band is even on better than the other nights. It's just those magical moments. And those are the times that people, you wish you could go in the audience today. I wish you could feel what I feel because of that. And then when you get the crowd involved in it, of course, when you guys walk out, people know who you are anyway. But then when it all is one melting pot of the band and the crowd, there isn't anything better.
Yeah, it's like a two-way street, you know, like a radio transmission. You know, someone's got to hear it for it to like happen. You know, yeah, you're right. You know, like I said, when we started playing the first few notes of Like a Rolling Stone, and everybody realized what was happening. It was just like this incredible energy went over the whole hall. We've had lots of experiences doing that. I mean, got to play Albert Hall with Jimmy Webb and a full orchestra, and you know, and George Harrison was hanging out with us, and I mean, it was like in Harry Nilsson, you know. So it was like, that was I've had lots of great moments, you know. I've really been blessed with that kind of stuff.
Well, and you got to meet a lot of people, but I think the other thing about it is you got to meet them when they're not playing, you know, because you're in a club. You're in the club, and I tell younger musicians this. Actually, I'm going to go up. You're talking about, I'm 10 minutes from the University of North Texas, which is obviously the famous, a lot of famous people went there. I'm speaking up there at the end of January to a group of musicians up there. And, you know, I'm going to tell them the same thing I tell all young people. Once you get in the club, it doesn't matter what kind of genre you play, you're in the club. You're in a multiple club because you played jazz, you played classical, you played contemporary, you've played rock. And so you can have a conversation with anybody that's a musician.
Right. Yeah, you're right. And when you meet these guys, like you said, off stage and you're just hanging out, you realize that all of them are, just the cats, man. They're just musicians, just like you, George Harrison's and other musicians. I remember Billy met Keith Richards, and they were before I was in the band, the Stones. And Little Feet opened for the Stones, and Keith was like, you know, we're all cut from the same cloth, mate. You know, it's like we're all just the cats, man, in the band. All have played shitty clubs, all have had the same, you know, experiences. No matter how rich and famous you are, we've all had the same guitars and the same amps and the same riding around in the same vans. You know?
Well, yeah, nobody started out with a custom Fender Strat.
Yeah,
you know, and a Marshall or a Twin, you know, people don't. Everybody starts out at the bottom, and you know, back then a lot of people were playing the old Sears silver tones.
Oh yeah, because those are great now.
Now you can't.
My son's got one. I play all the time.
Does he have the one with the little amp in the case?
Yeah.
Wow.
I remember when those were still $50. You walk in to a, you know, a Kmart, and you could get the Sears like case and guitar for $50.
Well, you bought it from Sears. You know, you could pick it up from the catalog. You know, the other thing too, I was when I was watching your rig. When did you pick up? And you mentioned another performer that I was always a big fan of. When you were interviewed, you were talking about Ry Cooder.
Right.
And when did you pick up the mandolin? Was that something you kind of started listening to Ryan Sue? I think I like that. What was the situation with that?
My friend Van Dyke Parks was always encouraging me to play mandolin. And I started out, you know, playing mandolin like in the studios, like doing TV show, like when I did the Cher show, you know, there would be an Italian comedy skit, you know. And Tommy Tedesco, the famous sushis, session player, you know, he'd say, tune it like a guitar, you know, don't worry about a mandolin, you know, just tune it like a guitar, play your little like line and go on with your life. And Van Dyke was like encouraging me, you know, you got to tune it like in the fist, like it's supposed to be, and play it on this and that. And he was always encouraging me to play it. So I started learning it. But like I said on that interview, when I first heard the first Ry Cooder records, the first bunch of Ry Cooder records, there was just amazing, like funky, bluesy mandolin, which I never, because I don't know anything about bluegrass music or any of that kind of stuff. But when I, you know, my whole inspiration was what Ry was doing, you know. And I can't play like him. He would laugh and say, you know, everybody thinks, you know, they know what I'm doing, but they don't. And it's true. Nobody knows what Rye's doing. He plays some really cool tunings, and man. But it's just the inspiration of seeing him play and trying to play like him that makes you play the way you do.
Oh,
you
know?
Well, like, you know, I'm trying to play like Rye Cooter. I'm not playing like Rye Cooter, but, you know, that's my aspiration.
I found, you know, I discovered him on the Stones album when he played French horn. And I thought, who's this Rye Cooter guy? And, you know, back then we just bought albums just to hear, you know, if we find a song, we heard everything on the radio. Mm-hmm. And I picked up an album, and I don't know if I still have it, Into the Purple Valley.
Yeah.
Which he played, and he played these old 30s and 40s songs. And I'm thinking, man, this is really cool stuff. And then when he got into slide work, and I went, okay, that's enough of that nonsense, because he was so freaking good. He is good on slide and playing, like, where are the frets? You know, you're just smooth. So, when you mention people like that, and you mention Van Dyke Parks, every time you mention somebody, I go, oh, my gosh, I haven't heard those names in a while. But they were all very well-known, very famous musicians. And I just keep thinking about it. I can see why you continue to do what you do. I mean, because, I mean, now you're opening, I mean, you're doing a show tonight for New Year's Eve. Let me go back to one of the things about your interview on Premiere. When you first started, remember the days, we didn't have any pedals. What was your first amp that you really liked? Was it a Fender? Could you afford a Fender?
Yeah, I've always had Fenders, I think. I can't remember not having a Fender. I think I had a Magnatone once at one point. But yeah, no, I've always had Fender amplifiers, man. I'm a Fender guy, man.
Well, and then, you know, I was looking at, you were talking about your pedals, but back in the day, there weren't any pedals.
No, there wasn't. We didn't, you know, you just played, solos were played more clean sound. It wasn't like an overdrive, you know, didn't have like overdrives and things. You just, you know, crank up, you know, you didn't turn your amp, your guitar all the way up. And then when you had a solo, you turned it all the way up.
Well, the equipment we had back then, the PAs and all that, were just nothing compared to what everything is now.
Oh, yeah. Someone pointed out here in Dallas, as a matter of fact, we played this convention center, and it was one of those places that had this kind of rim around the thing, and the stage was just this rim, so everybody in the band was practically standing in a row next to each other. It wasn't like the drums were in back and you were in front. It was like everybody was in a line around this curve, right?
Yeah.
At the end of this convention center. And the guitar tech said, look up in the ceiling. And they had those round speakers with the little holes in them up way up high in the speakers. And they're going, that's the PA system the Beatles played through. You know, it's just like nothing, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's why one of the reasons I think the Beatles quit, they couldn't hear because they didn't have the PA equipment.
No, they had nothing right there, you know. And if you listen to the live, the Hollywood Bowl album,
when
my wife was at that show, and she said you couldn't hear a note because everybody was screaming. And it's, the vocals are perfectly in tune, man. They sound great. You know, it's like, how did they do that? You know, they're just doing it by rote, you know.
So
sometimes you play and you can't hear, and you just do it anyway.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's second nature. They were already doing it so good by that time. They had already been played and all over the place. But, you know, and as I watched all the stuff that you have on the floor, and I got to a point where I didn't really have a lot of stuff. But some of the things I understood, because you had, which is kind of really nice now, is you can have special effects for songs that you did, you know. That's what's great about it to me. Because I remember you said you pushed on one and you said, this is what I use on this song and this is what I use on this tune.
Right.
And compressor, I always used a compressor just so I could boost my leads up. Because I'm a lead guitar player and, of course, I always play too loud. So, you know.
That's what they all say. The compressors, just, I learned that from Lowell George. He's the master of the MXR Redbox. I mean, you crank that guy all the way up, you know, the compression part all the way up. It's great for slide, you know. And so, and then I just started using it still, you know, to get a little bit more sustain and all, you know. But all of my pedals, except for I got a phase that I try to use to recreate some of the stuff Paul Barrera would use on the old records. He liked the phasers a lot in the chorus, and the compression is Lowell, and everything else is like louder. This is a little louder than that, and that makes it a little louder, and this makes it really loud. You know, it's just, you know, it just gets louder and louder every time you press a button.
You know, it's also interesting to me that when you look at the history of Little Feet, it kind of, and I'm a big Yes fan, you know, prog rock, and I can't keep track of how many members have been in it. That's the same way with Little Feet. Historically, if you look at everything that you got, and that's one of the things that's always amazed me with a band like Little Feet, that somehow you've been able to keep it cemented together. I mean, and I'm sure people want to play in the band, but that doesn't mean they can fit.
Yeah. It's always been like someone that we already knew. We never had auditions or anything for, you know, like come audition to be in Little Feet. It was always somebody that we knew or knew of, you know, that we, you know, when we got Craig Fuller in the band from originally and me, I had a long history with the guys because we're friends. And then Craig Fuller and Eric Taz had opened for Little Feet a lot. So we knew that, you know, we knew how Craig sang a lot like Lowell. And so we got him. And then when he decided he wanted to be on the road, we got Sean Murphy, who had been, you know, Billy and I had played with Bob Seger for a long time. And she was like closely associated with Bob Seger. And so we used her for a bunch of years. And then it went back down to just the guys. And when Paul died, the saxophone player said, I know this guy, that Scott Sherrard, who has been Greg Allman's dude. In fact, Paul was still alive, but he couldn't make the last tour, and we needed someone to substitute for us,
right,
for him. And we thought he was going to, you know, come back. But this guy, saxophone player, recommended Scott from Greg Allman's band. He was Greg Allman's musical director, and he said, this guy's been studying Little Feet since he was 12 years old, man. You know, he knows everything, you know, you gotta. And so we said, okay, man, we called this guy and said, can you come in and play this one show? And it turned out the show that he came in to play was the day that Paul died.
Wow.
We literally left the hotel, and our manager told us that Paul had passed on. And we went to sound check it. So, and Scott came in probably 30 minutes. We probably met Scott 30 minutes after we found out Paul was dead. And Scott just like stood up, boom, played all the tunes perfectly. And we just went, this guy's in the band. he's amazing, man, you know. And well, he always said, I've been trying to recreate Little Feet for like 20-something years, and I finally had to just join. I couldn't do it.
Well, you do, you know, that music has a sense of not being able, you couldn't repeat it, you know, you replicate it. It's all about the timing and the shuffle and all that stuff that you guys do with those older songs too. There's just something about that writing, the early writing, and even carried on, you know, like I said, in the 80s when Let It Roll came out, it was that thing with Paul doing his thing and all that stuff. And it's sad to me, because bands don't play it. I mean, everybody wants to be a tribute band, but you don't hear any about Little Feet tribute bands, because you get the real thing. But that was the other thing about listening to your music and all that music that you've played on is with Little Feet, is it's not that, it's easy, but not that easy. I mean, as a musician listening to it, because there's something about it that's different. It's kind of like listening, you're talking about being jazz. You know, not everybody can play jazz.
Yeah.
And
it's sort of like, we always say it's like a rock and roll band. It's like a jazz band that plays rock and roll. You know?
Well, it is kind of like that. And, you know, the other thing.
But it's all for improvisation, you know. I mean, you know, there's things that happen every night that are, you know, different and strange.
Well,
it's just, you know, whatever goes down.
And that's the great thing about what you can do, because you guys can kind of play off each other on stage.
Because
you've been together for so long. And I never was a big fan of going to watch bands, and I know a lot of people want to. They want to hear it note for note. But I'm kind of one that's like, I don't, you know, step out of the normal bit. Don't go a 10-minute solo, but give me something different. Because we've heard the recording before.
Yeah.
And the other thing, too, when you started out your musical career is you learned how to read music, mm-hmm. which I pretty well suck at it. I can read it, but I'm not a sight reader. So that had to help you, especially when you're playing jazz. Did you have drum music, too, and you played drums? Did you know how to read that, too?
Yeah, but wow. Most of the time playing, you know, like if you were playing in a big band, instead of the drum part, they would give you the lead trumpet part. You could follow along with that, you know, and you'd see what was really going on. It was always more helpful to see the trumpet part than it was to see the drum part, because the drum part would just say, play time for 32 bars, you know. But if you saw the trumpet part, you could see where all the hits were and all the licks and everything and play along with it. So that was kind of my experience when I was playing drums. But in a trio or a quartet or something, it's just totally improvisation, you know.
Well, especially if you're playing jazz tradition. I mean, if you're playing at a Holiday Inn, and you said Strangers in the Night or whatever song you mentioned, mm-hmm. You can kind of improv. But, you know, I still like see the old, the guy that played the Lucy music, but the Vince Ghirardelli or whatever his name was, the trio that played all that famous.
Ghiraldi,
yeah. Thank you. That was a three-piece band, and I still enjoy that.
Oh, yeah, Cast Your Fate to the Winds was like my favorite song when it came out, man. It was just, you know, everybody was trying to figure out how to play that, you know, because you could actually figure it out, you know.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, it's good. I know a lot of people don't, some of the older players don't like digital, but, and they want to stay with the analog. I never was that big, and I remember when digital came about, but. You know, we can do so much more now. Now, of course, the other part of that, which you are greatly aware of, nobody buys records anymore.
Yeah, right.
And so, you know, I had a friend of mine that saw the Eagles in November. And I said, how much were the tickets? $450. And that was, you know, up in the top. It wasn't all the way up to the top.
Yeah, that's cheap seats.
Yeah, that's cheap seats. And people don't understand. I said, they don't make any royalties anymore. So they have to tour.
With the new deal now, the artists and the writers have been kind of cut out of the mix. I heard from somebody that the record companies bought stock in all the streaming services, so they're getting they're getting paid. But
well, they're all
nobody
getting,
else is, you know.
It's just like it always was with the labels.
Yeah, it's gone back to like the '50s.
Yeah, you know, and then
sell merchandise, and you know, that's how you make your
show
money.
Up and do it, but. Hey, I don't want to keep you anymore. I know you need to probably get some rest, but I want to tell you how much I do appreciate you talking to me, my friend.
It's my pleasure.
And I'm going to keep your number because you – I started this. So let me tell you real quick before I hang up. I didn't take the route that you did. I wanted to, but I just didn't want to spend my time with four guys traveling in a van and eating peanut butter sandwiches.
Yeah,
and,
I know.
And so I went into corporate business.
Right.
And became executive of companies and all that stuff. My last gig was president of a nonprofit. But about 4.5 years ago, I retired from that. My wife said, "What are you going to do?" And I was in a band, but we know how COVID killed everything.
Yeah.
And I said, a singer in my band said, "Why don't we do a podcast?" And I said, "Okay." And then we were just doing some fun stuff. And then he said, "Why don't we're musicians? Why don't we talk to musicians?" And I went, "Duh."
Yeah,
so
there
I started with people in Dallas, and then he went back to his day job, as they like to say. And I since I'm retired, and I get to do what I really like to do. I still record my own music, but you know, talking with people like you and other famous musicians and people that really is something I enjoy tremendously. And so, you know, getting the honor really to talk to people like you is something, and people don't understand this because I just finished up, and I have PR people now. I started from scratch, and I have PR people that call me, and that's how I reach out to your PR person.
And
so my point of all that is, you know a lot of people, so I'm always looking for the next person I can interview. And the way I always treat this is they're friends of yours, and if you don't want to talk to them, I understand. I've had people, I'd say, if you don't want to ask them, don't ask them. But does Boz Skaggs, does he still tour?
Yeah, I'm sure Boz tours.
The last thing I saw him in was he was playing with Michael McDonald. It's been a few years ago, and Donald Fagen. They did that that show. Yeah.
Those guys are good friends.
How long, just real quick, how long is your show typically? How long do you guys play?
I think an hour and a half to 2 hours, something like that.
Do you have a break, or you just play straight through?
No, we just play straight through. It's, let's see, 90, yeah, probably a couple hours, I guess, maybe. I never have really thought about it.
Well, and then you get, I forgot where you go from here, but I see where you're going to be in Cancun.
Yeah, we're having one of our feet, you know, feet fan events that we used to, we did about 20 years in Jamaica, and now we moved to Mexico.
Mexico.
And Cancun is going to be the first first time there, so it's going to be a new deal. Should be a lot of fun. I love going to Mexico. I go down to Tijuana. I live in Los Angeles, so I go to Tijuana all the time.
Then you have a break, and then it don't have much going on, but do you guys plan on touring again next year, keep going?
Oh, yeah, yeah. We have a big summertime tour. We're doing a bunch of stuff with Tedeschi Trucks. And,
oh, man.
We're also going to do some stuff
There's
with
a great band
Los
right
Lobos.
There.
Our good buddies, Los Lobos, we're going to do some summertime touring with, which is going to be great. We love those guys, you know, L.A. funk. And so, and we're getting, you know, getting ready to make a new record. So we're going to be, you know, we're all writing songs and figuring all that out. We're going to go rehearse in February and go through all the tunes and learn them and figure out what we're going to do. And then in March, I think we're going to record and stuff like that. So
then you got to back that up with a tour.
Yeah, so there's a lot of stuff going on.
Well, that's it for this episode of The Trout Show. Thank you so much for stopping by. We appreciate it immensely. A very special thank you to Fred Tackett for taking time out of his tour to talk to me about his musical career. If you'd like to know more about the band Little Feet, if you're not a fan, you might want to be, visit their website at littlefeet.net. littlefeet.net. And a special shout-out, of course, to our continued support from David Smith with Ever Jones. And more information about The Trout Show, you can go to our website at thetroutshow.com and find previous episodes, whether it be on YouTube or a podcast. All of that information is there, and new music that's coming out from The Trout Show. If you want to follow me on Instagram, my handle is Texas Rocker. And what's coming up? The next episode is one of the most important episodes I've ever done as The Trout Show. So until next time, people, remember what I always say. It's only rock and roll, but I love it. See ya.